last time we were together here on Abounding Grace, we spent time in Exodus 25 looking at the bread of presence and the significance of this element in the Holy of Holies. Well, there's another article found in the Holy of Holies, and that is the golden lampstand. The significance of this lampstand is really quite remarkable, as we'll see today. Spend a few moments with us here on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon as we explore Exodus together, chapter 25, verses 23 through 30. And we'll focus in on the golden lampstand, its meaning and significance. Here's Pastor Chris now with today's broadcast.
The lampstand was a teaching instrument to always remind Israel that the Lord was their light. Isn't that what Psalm 27 begins with, that we sung out together tonight? The Lord is our light and our salvation. The lampstand taught of the Lord's presence among them. We think in Revelation where the churches were threatened that he would remove their lampstand, which was a threat that his presence would go away from that church. So they would go on and do whatever they wanted to do. But that did not mean that the Lord was blessing that. That did not mean that the Lord's presence was there. And that goes on today. So we see in here the importance of the lampstand really helping Israel understand his presence. And we're going to look at some of that tonight, whereas we look at the meaning of the lampstand, the fulfillment, and then the ways in which we can apply and understand this today. Let's begin with the construction of what the Lord had commanded them to make here at the end of chapter 25. And you have that given some detail there in verse 31, where the Lord commands that they are to build a lampstand, you'll notice, of pure gold of a hammered work. At the very end of this, you picked up again that the Lord keeps reminding, and the book of Hebrews always comes back to pick up on this point, that everything that was made came from the sketch that was handed to Moses, the blueprints, if you will, and he was to make them exactly according to the pattern that was shown to him on the mountain. I'm going to come back to that, but you remember then that these were copies, says Hebrews, of the true. So it was teaching something about heaven. You'll notice here in this particular case that it was made out of pure gold. They say probably about 3 to 5 feet. It says in verse 32 that 6 branches shall come out of its sides, 3 out of each side of this lampstand with the center sort of shaft, and they would curve up. And you'll notice that 3 out of one side, 3 out of the other side. And this central shaft with a base, these 6 branches would spread out, curving and reaching short of the main branch, which was to tower over the rest. We'll come back to that too. But that means that there were these 7 lamps. What's really beautiful here is some of the description and the color and how ornate and how beautiful this lampstand was to be. You notice that everything is so detailed, so beautiful. On each of the 3 branches were these buds that opened up in the form of an almond flower. And then in these almond flowers, there was resting in there a bowl or on the top called the cup or the lamp holder. And in that, you would have the wick and the oil. You read that in verse 37 there, where it says, "You shall make 7 lamps for it, and the lamp shall be set up so as to give light on the space in front of it. Its tongs and their tray shall be of pure gold." And it goes on to give some more detail there. So you have these 3 blossoming buds spreading on flowers on each, as flowers on each branch. And in the center trunk, there were 4. Now, if you turn over to chapter 27 and look at verse 20, this was the instruction that had to do with this. In verse 20, in the oil for the lamp, "You shall command the people of Israel that they bring to you pure beaten olive oil for the light, that a lamp may regularly be set up to burn in the tent of meeting outside the veil that is before the testimony, Aaron and his son shall tend it from evening to morning before the Lord. It shall be a statute forever to be observed throughout their generations by the people of Israel. Notice that. Evening until morning. You have to think a little bit about the setting here then. In the next chapter, he's going to describe all of these layers for the tabernacle. So you would have in this building four layers that went over, sort of covers over this tabernacle structure. And the first, that cloth that lined it, was made of pure linen. On top of that was another cloth of goat's hair. On top of that, there were fine ram skins. And then over the last one was a kind of waterproof tarp that was made, in verse 14 says of the next chapter, was made of badger skins. This was a thick, four-layer structure, and you can imagine how dark it was on the inside. So you remember, you had the most holy place, the ark was, and then you had the holy place, and in the holy place, you'll notice here was the table for showbread, the altar of incense, and the golden lampstand. So this is an important section tonight to look at and consider the importance of this lampstand. Now, it would have been a lot like a cave in there. There were no windows. There was no moisture. It would have been very silent in there. The setting would have been similar to what I described in Carlsbad. Complete darkness had engulfed the holy place. So the basic purpose then was, you'll notice it was said, to provide light for Aaron and his sons, the priests, to minister on behalf of the people. It gave them light. The lamps lit up the holy place, shining light on the table of showbread. Now, you remember how important the table of showbread was. For there, we remembered in the table of showbread that taught that God would care for his people. That was tonight in the Heidelberg. It taught the same thing in the wilderness. God would supply his people with bread. He would care for all of their needs. He would provide them the manna from heaven. And we looked at that. Well, what about this lampstand? I want us to think about this tonight. This lampstand and light that was given in the holy place. From the center shaft grew out three branches on each side they were to construct, decorated in gold with buds and knops and bowls and flowers. What is this? I mean, that's the question. What is this? The golden lampstand was a great symbol of God's life-giving power. This is how it's generally received, that they were showing branches that are flourishing with fruit. There's fruit all over these branches. Buds and blossoming flowers and almonds. You notice almond flowers. And think of the beauty of this in the wilderness. Here in the wilderness, they are in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. And here is this lampstand, and all over it is the symbolism of life in the wilderness. A tree-like structure. Everything flowing out of this center shaft. Now, that's a wonderful psalm that we sing this morning, didn't we? We think of the psalm, Psalm 63. And I think that's the one we sang this morning. See, I'm going to get myself in trouble here. No, it's Psalm 63. I was right. I sang this one. Thou art my God, O God of grace, and earnestly I seek your face. My heart cries out for you. My spirit thirsts thy grace to taste, an exile in this desert waste, in which no waters be. I long, as in the times of old, thy power and glory to behold within thy holy place. Because thy tender love I see, more precious far than life to me. My lips shall praise thy grace, my lips shall praise thy grace. Thus will I bless thee while I live, and with uplifted hands will give praise to thy holy name. When by thy bounty well supplied, then shall my soul be satisfied, my mouth shall praise proclaim. My lips shall thy praise delight when on my bed I rest at night and meditate on thee, because thy hand assistance brings. Beneath the shadow of thy wings, my heart shall joyful be. This is all about holy place, blessings flowing in the wilderness out of the holy place. That's what that psalm is. That's what we're singing when we sing in the wilderness where there's no water. Life is coming out of that place. This is what they understood about that. Well, think about this beautiful section then, where in the wilderness, not only would he provide for them and give them bread and be their bread in the manna from heaven, but that he was the source of their life. That's the first thing. But that's not it. He was also their light. On the top of the lamp was a wick, all of which again was dependent on this center shaft. And at the top was an immense sort of source of light to them. In the darkness, it lit up the whole place where the priest ministered. And the meaning was clear. Not only was the Lord the source of their life, the Lord was their light. Israel had already experienced this from the Lord. When he brought them through the sea, you remember how scary that was. He was their light. He went before them as light. He surrounded them as light. The Egyptians, remember what the Lord did. He came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. So there was a cloud and darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other. He was the light. He had come and surrounded them. So that one did not come near the other all night. The Lord was reminding them by a perpetual decree, he is their light. And notice the reason it was never to be put out. The lampstand burned continually to tell them, as long as the Lord was with them, there is light. It'll never go out. They'll never be in darkness. Now what an encouragement that he was their light and their life. Remember, the tabernacle structure was God coming down to dwell with them. You can't help but think about what was lost in the fall. That there was a tree of life there. There was a light there at the beginning when God, when his presence dwelt with man in the Garden of Eden. And when Adam and Eve ate of the fruit and they forfeited, you remember what happened. They were essentially thrust out of the garden, away from the tree of life. They had no more access to the life of the Lord, no more access to that tree. And then the swords went up, and the whole picture being east of Eden, out in the land of Nod, is that mankind wandered in the darkness now. That's our problem. They had no access again to the tree. They were kept out. They were kept away. Well, this is an interesting study in Exodus, because now the Lord is coming down to them, and here he set up the life and the light. But how would they get to it? The way of access to God's presence was taken away in the fall. Sin has left us barred from the presence of God. And that's why there was a big 4-inch, 6-inch, 4-inch thick curtain that sealed off everything. Well, when God had this candlestick made and erected, he was announcing something. He was announcing something to Israel. I really believe that when Hebrews says the gospel was preached to them in the wilderness, the author's thinking of these things. That he had come down to dwell with them, and that he was their light in their life, and these priests would minister on their behalf, all anticipating something greater. How could they receive light? How could they receive life? Well, you come to the New Testament and you have spiritual significance becomes much more clear when we ultimately understand all of the language in the New Testament that is used to describe this. If the whole thing spoke of light and life of the Lord, how wonderful it is how the New Testament takes and applies these themes and the lampstand of Christ. Listen to what Jesus said one day. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself. The Son is life-giving, and he gives his life to whom he will. The Son has the power to reverse what happened. When death reigned, death reigned in the first Adam. The second Adam has come to give light and life again, access to the tree again. But one of the most powerful statements comes by our Lord and in John's gospel when John said, and I quoted part of it this morning, if anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. And how can we miss John 1? The Word became flesh and tabernacled among us, fulfilling the whole tabernacle structure. We'll get more to that. And we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth, to which John begins the gospel by saying, not only is he our tabernacle, but in him was the life and the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not comprehend it. So Christ is fulfilling both of these realities. Showing us significance of the golden lampstand, that he's the tabernacle, that he is the light, and he is the life. This middle shaft towering was the source for all of the branches, to which life went into them. And they budded, and they bore fruit. You can't help but think of Jesus when he says, I'm the vine and you're the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. Without me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he's cast out as a branch and is withered. And they gather them and throw them into the fire and they're burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire and it shall be done for you. By this my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit. Buds were all over these branches. He's the support. He's the source of light. He's the source of life. He's the light of men. John 8 is remarkable. John is taking all these themes, and there's real ties with John's gospel in Exodus. And in John 8, Jesus is in the court of women. There were 13 trumpet-shaped boxes there for the people to offer their money. But you know what was also there? They were giant gilded candelabra. What that means is they were lampstands 50 feet high, two of which stood in the court of women. Near these collection boxes, he stands right in front of these candlesticks in the court of women one day, John 8, and says, now, this is where you have to know the history to pick this up. He stands right in front of these candlesticks and says, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. It's right there, right in front of him. If you follow me, my light, I will lead you to the land, is what he was saying, and you won't walk in darkness. But you'll have the light of life. If you turn away from this light, your alternative is to go on in the darkness and perish in the darkness. Jesus was saying this all the time. Light and life were huge themes in the gospel. It's remarkable how many times in that little epistle, 1 John, light or life is used. Life. Let me give you a big picture tonight. I think Hebrews does this well. Now, this is the main point of the things we're saying. We have such a high priest. Think of the high priest that would go in there and serve. We have such a high priest who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which the Lord erected and not man. But Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with a greater and more perfect tabernacle not made with hands, that is not of this creation. And then goes into chapter 9. For Christ has not entered the holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. That's securing your place. So Christ was offered once to bear the sins of many. To those who eagerly wait for him, he will appear a second time apart from sin for salvation. He's there serving you. Think of this morning. He's your high priest. He's there as your light. He's there who secures the place before the throne for you and gives in your life right now light and life. This is what he did for Bartimaeus this morning. He gave the man life and light right in front of you in that text. He's the one. He's what the candlestick is all about. He's our light. Now maybe as a point of closing tonight, what happens to those who are walking in the light? Well, who have received this life? You have to think a little bit about branches, don't you? They begin to bud. You can't hear all these things and not begin to bud. He's life-giving. He gives you this light, and he gives you life so that he can now say to you, you are my light. Isn't that beautiful? You are my lights in this world. Every good branch will bear fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down. The evidence is what? A budding branch. I've always loved John 10. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Again, getting back to Heidelberg tonight, that's his will for you. It's his desire for you. John himself was so moved by that. I have it here. 13 times he mentions life in 1 John. And light. The branch full of fruit on the top is a lamp. On these tops, the six branches connected with the center shaft are lit up. What was the Lord teaching us? When you have life and the light has come to you, your light shines. I mean, this is what Jesus is thinking about. It was his great concern. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. What Jesus was saying is, you're in union with me. This means your light is going to shine. That's what's going to happen. I think Phil Ryken captures it beautifully when he says, we are called to shine for Christ, giving a glowing testimony of saving grace. We shine for Christ when we go out of our way to show special kindness. We shine when we do our work cheerfully, without complaining. We shine when we give generously to those who are in need. We shine brightest of all when we share the gospel, telling people what God has done to save us through the death and resurrection of Christ. Amen. That's how you shine. So what an opportunity we have then to go out this week, and after hearing that he has given us light, and he has given us light, life, that he has taken away our blindness, that he has given us to see him by faith as blind Bartimaeus and filled our hearts with life, to now to go and be light as he wants us to be. That's his resurrection life. I believe that's a lot what Paul was saying, that I want you to know Christ in the power of his resurrection. It's resurrection life that he has done and given to you. I hope that helps a little bit to understand some of the lampstand tonight, and to praise God that he has given you this day both things, light and life.
This is Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Just enough time to leave you with our contact information. We'd love to hear from you. It's always a delight knowing you're being blessed by this radio program. Reach out to us at our website, agradio.org. Questions@agradio.org. If you wish to email us any questions you might have, or praise reports, comments about the program, or give us a call, 888-504-8805. By the way, when you visit our website, agradio.org, tons of resource material for you to tap into, as well as links to our other platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Again, all at agradio.org. And that phone number, once again, is 888-504-8805. looking to write to us. If you're old school, the address for your envelope is Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Hey, thanks for joining us today. Until next time, God bless. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.